Turning our attention now to the Green Drive Expo that's coming up this weekend, and also hybrid technology, obviously very closely related, as we visit with three guests, two of them with me right now. The third will be joining us in just a little while. Glenn Bauer, a master's and PhD in mechanical engineering from the UW-Madison. He is has the role of advisor for the UW College of Engineering's competitive automotive teams. He teaches and does research. Glenn, good to see you again.
Great to be here.
Thanks for taking time. John Dolan has been a guest on our show many times, too. He's a hybrid specialist at Smart Motors in Madison. He's been working with hybrids and the new plug-in hybrids for a long, long time, more over a decade, I believe. And, John, great to see you again.
Thanks for having me back.
And I'll turn on your microphone, and then it'll work better.
It did sound a little dumb.
It sounded a little dull there. Eric Powers will be with us in a bit. He's a local green entrepreneur, started the Green Drive Expo 6 years ago, and we have one here in Madison. There's another in the San Francisco Bay Area, so he'll be with us in a bit, and we'll talk with him as well. Great to have you guys here. Glenn, what's the science behind hybrid vehicles? What is it?
The science behind hybrids. Well,
yeah, give me a minute or two here.
A hybrid, just by definition, has more than one power source. So typically what's happening is we're using some type of conventional engine. And then from there, electricity or batteries seems to be the route that has found its way into all the hybrids as a second power source. So we're looking at either gas electric or diesel electric as the hybrids of choice.
And there's some new technology. You guys are working on some new things over at here on campus that I thought are really cool.
Yeah, we are. Actually, the university has an engine research center in the graduate area of the College of Engineering, and they've patented a new combustion technology called RCCI, which is reactivity controlled compression ignition. And what they're doing is they're using two fuels. And by blending the two fuel percentages, they can control where the combustion is stable. The kicker is that if you take a normal diesel engine and convert it to this type of technology, the efficiency goes up by 25% to 30%, and you need no after treatment for the soot or NOx emissions.
Oh.
So it's and the two fuels we like to use are ethanol and biodiesel, which are very abundant in this state.
So you're working on your team of people is working on fine-tuning it.
Yeah, so the graduate students are kind of working on fine-tuning the engine part, and then the undergraduates are actually taking that and incorporating it into a vehicle. So the graduate students are great at the fundamentals, but when it comes to figuring out all the wires in a vehicle and how to make it all work and the safeties needed to make sure it's in a vehicle correctly, that's kind of what the undergraduates are taking care of. And so we've actually bridged that gap between the undergraduate and the graduate school.
Oh, that is very cool. And we'll come back to that and talk some more about it. But John, I want to get John involved here. We bought a hybrid from you a couple years ago now.
A couple of summers ago
mm-hmm. now. And Renee drives it and gets 50 miles to the gallon. Well, she can get more, but she's generally gets 50 to the gallon.
50 is a sweet spot. The Prius is totally dialed in for 50, unless you're a heavy-footed driver. Most people can get 50.
Are there ways to maximize the fuel efficiency?
Yeah, there are a lot of techniques. The most popular is the pulse and glide, where you look at all the instrumentation and all the readouts on your screens, and you can tell your battery state of charge and whether you're being propelled by the electric or the gas, and you use the momentum of the vehicle to keep it electric longer and fool the computer into keeping it electric longer. By the way, you're manipulating your foot pedal inputs. Pulse and glide will give you sometimes, as the people who do the hypermiling event at Green Drive Expo can attest, up to 99.9 miles per gallon, which is as high as it reads out. But of course, at that point, you're driving a little bit like an older gentleman pulling a trailer full of crystal chandeliers, and you're afraid you're going to break them. And so that annoys a lot of people if you drive like that.
Yeah, and actually probably causes other people to spend more on their gas.
Yes, and their brakes as well.
And their brakes as well. Oh, well, you've been selling and servicing hybrids for a decade, more than a decade. What are the trends you're seeing in who wants to drive hybrids and why?
The biggest trend is we've moved away many years ago from the environmentalist or the technology geek who just wanted to have the latest technology. Now we're seeing more mainstream drivers. In fact, we've got a person in there today as I left with a Hummer, the biggest change I've ever seen. He wants to trade in his Hummer and get a Prius. In the past, that's always been kind of an antagonistic crowd. So it's kind of interesting to see a Hummer owner coming into trading his Prius. So it's more of a mainstream buyer, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, man. Well, Glenn Bauer, John Dolan, our guests for now as we talk with them about hybrid technology. You have questions. I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and post a question or a comment right there at the page, and we'd love to hear from you. Well, Glenn, are hybrids, they're a good thing?
Well, I would say it depends upon where you live and how you drive and the route that you take to work. So if you live next to an interstate and drive 50 miles on the interstate to your place of employment, then if you take into the account the extra energy it takes to produce the additional components like the battery and the motor in the hybrid, overall, you're probably not really saving anything for the environment. But basically the people live in the urban areas, high populations where you do a lot of stop and go, stoplight traffic, that's where the hybrids excel in basically increasing fuel economy. And you can see, our students got 50 to 75% fuel economy gains in the city driving.
Whoa.
So that's, that's what you want to look at. You want to target the people that do a lot of that, slower speed stop and go. And by slower, I mean 0 to 40-ish, 45-ish type traffic.
Yeah, yep. And that's pretty much where the vast majority of people are anyway, isn't it?
That's right. When you look at the EPA numbers on a typical Maroney label, we call it, you'll see that the city mileage is always higher than the highway on a hybrid, a full hybrid. Not so much with a mild hybrid, but full hybrids it is.
Michael in Madison has a question or comment. Michael, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I'm a longtime Prius owner now. We just bought our third Prius. We had a Jeep Grand Cherokee when we moved to Wisconsin 10 years ago, and we needed a second car, and so we went out and got a Prius, a brand new one, and ended up with between 43 and 48 miles per gallon. And when I did the math, that car I still own, it's got 260,000 miles on it. It's a 2004, and it's just been wonderful. The maintenance has been ideal and cheap and hasn't been really an issue for any of that stuff. When you do the math between a Jeep that gets about 16 miles a gallon, that was a V8 Grand Cherokee Limited, and this Prius here for 256,000 miles, this car has been free.
Exactly.
That's about a $30,000 difference. And you're talking about $3.50 a gallon and the difference between even 43 or 48. The new Prius that we just bought for my wife is getting about 51, 52, so considerably better even than any of the numbers that we had for the Prius that we bought in 2004. I have a question for you, and that's, when do you think the next generation, we hear about the plug-ins, I know this Prius isn't going to last forever, or if it does, I'll let it last forever for somebody else.
Right.
When do you think the next generation comes out?
The next generation Prius is scheduled for 2014. Next year, Toyota has a rollout of two more siblings, I guess you want to call it. They're going to have an extended Prius family. And so they're going to have a Prius V, which is going to be more of a multi-purpose van, kind of a vanish Prius. It's going to have about 60% more cargo space than the current Prius, a little bit longer, wider, taller, and all that. And then there's going to be a Prius C, which will be about the size of our current Yaris, maybe a little bit bigger than the current Yaris, a subcompact. And that will probably be the most fuel-efficient car on the road when that finally comes out. That's due to come out next year as well. So next year we have two new Priuses coming out, and a plug-in Prius, which is just going to have a battery on steroids and have a plug-in capability.
By the way, have you had to replace your battery?
I never have, and I was going to ask you that question as well. I had my very first experience learning about a gentleman that did have to replace his battery. He apparently was a guy who had bought a used one with about 105,000 miles on it, and the battery went out fairly quickly after that, but evidently Toyota stepped up somehow and did something nice for him to make that a little more palatable. But no, we've replaced the starter battery, the little tiny, you know, regular old starter battery now twice in 8 years, but never, ever any issues whatsoever with the main battery pack at all.
Mm-hmm. If there's a problem with a Prius, it's been that little 12-volt battery because it's a little marine-sized, small space-saver 12-volt battery in our climate. I mean, you know, your typical lead-acid starter battery, accessory battery, will last 4 to 5 years. That little one is not making the 4 to 5 years. That's the only, because it's so much lower capacity than a regular 12-volt battery. But your experience with your traction battery, as we call it, the high-voltage battery, is actually pretty close to what we've encountered throughout. Toyota's tested those batteries for 180,000 miles of charges and discharges. They've been tested by the Oak Ridge Labs and the Pacific Labs and every other lab, including the Electric Vehicle Research Institute in Palo Alto. They've all come up with about the same numbers for charge lifetime.
Hmm. And that battery, Glenn, that battery technology has changed and gotten better over time. Do you see it getting even better?
Oh, well, I believe that the current technology in the Prius is still the nickel metal hydride,
right.
And they'll be the next model year, I'm guessing they're switching to their lithium ion. And basically, you don't save a lot of space, but you save weight with the lithium ion batteries, and they actually will give you longer service life. So if you look, look at a battery, what we try to do is we take the number of total amount of energy you can put in and out of the battery before it becomes useless or, you know, beyond a point where you can't use it. And you look at the lithium ions and you can get, you know, 40 to 50% more energy throughput through the life of the battery. So 260,000 under Prius, pretty soon you'll be 400,000 miles before you have to, you know, the battery goes out of it.
Our engineers tell us that the biggest obstacle, though, is cost. Manufacturing to put out a battery like that, it's like $1,000 per amp hour of capacity. And so if you take a battery like maybe the Volt has, that's like a $7,500 battery. They get to be very, very expensive. Lead acid still is a pretty good, I mean, not lead, excuse me, nickel are still a very good balance for the hybrid technology in that application. That's why Toyota's hung on to the nickel for so much longer. The nickel batteries in the Prius are in their fourth generation already.
Lots of good things here as we talk about hybrid technologies with Glenn Bauer from the College of Engineering at UW-Madison, John Dolan, hybrid specialist with Smart Motors. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today about the Green Drive Expo and hybrid technologies. And we have three guests for you. Glenn Bauer, who is with the College of Engineering at the UW-Madison, John Dolan with Toyota Smart Motors, Toyota dealer in Madison. Eric Powers joins us now, a local green entrepreneur. He started the Green Drive Expo 6 years ago with the help of some friends, and now he has a show in Madison and in the San Francisco Bay Area. He runs that in the fall. And he also runs the Midwest's longest-running hybrid car club right here in Madison. And recently started another business converting hybrids into plug-in hybrids. So, Eric, I've already said hello to John and Glenn, so I'll say hi to you. Thanks for coming.
Well, thanks for having me on, Larry.
Green Drive Expo, tell us a little about that before we go to the phones.
Yeah, well, Green Drive Expo, this will be our sixth year here in Madison, and it's a great opportunity for people to come out and see what's available from hybrid vehicles and other green vehicles. You know, Toyota, of course, will be there with their new Prius V wagon, as well as their plug-in Priuses, which are both vehicles that consumers just can't see anywhere else in the country at this point. It's really, there's lots of speakers, you know, test drives, and a lot of exhibitors to see what's available down there.
And where does this all take place?
Well, it's part of the Dane County Fair, and we're in the air-conditioned Exhibit Hall B, so come on down, do the fair stuff, get your candy bar deep fried on a stick or whatever it is down there, and then come on in and see what we have to offer and get your ideas about different transportation options.
And that's all the week of the fair?
It actually starts on Saturday from 10 to 5, and then noon to 5 on Sunday, so we're just there on the weekend.
And there's a big parade of hybrids that actually my wife and I and daughter are taking part in.
Oh, great, great. Yeah, actually Smart Motors, who've certainly helped support our event over the past 6 years, they have decided to try to break the Guinness World Record for the largest hybrid car parade. So since we have a lot of hybrid owners in town from, you know, all over the country already. They are doing this on Sunday morning before our event starts. Ours starts at noon. But if you go out to their website, you can sign up to be try to be in the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest hybrid car parade. We already have enough to break the record, but we need to smash that record. We need more. And I've been getting a lot of flack from my friends on the East Coast and West Coast, actually, saying, you know, why are you doing it in the Midwest? And we have a lot more here. And I'm like, but you know what? You need someone to organize it, and you know we have that already. So it's not officially our event. I'm on the planning committee with Smart Motors for the HOP. H-O-P, Hybrids on Parade.
All right.
So come down to the HOP.
Well, and the Green Drive Expo, Glenn, you guys are going to be over there in force, are you not?
Yeah, we'll have one of our vehicles on display. This will be the year we don't bring the EV one. We bring it every other year. It's a supply and demand thing. actually, the EV one is currently, we're working with Argonne, and we're actually doing some research with it, looking at some of the charging protocols that the U.S. and the European Union and then kind of the Asian people are all trying to agree upon a universal charging algorithm and signals and stuff. And so it's kind of a big deal. And
that's probably fairly important, I would think.
Yes, it is.
To have 25 different kinds of...
Well, all the automotive makers are worldwide, so they want to have one standard. So if they make it in the U.S., they can sell it in Europe, they can sell it in Japan, they can sell it in China. It works the same everywhere. And so that's why we have to have standards.
And that lack of a standard in the U.S., if I could just interject real quickly, that is probably one reason why the Scion IQ Electric will only be available when it comes to the U.S. to car sharing programs instead of individuals, because we have sort of an ad hoc charging network in the U.S. We don't have any standards, and Toyota figures until there's a standard, they don't want to make it a generally available consumer car.
There you go. Brian in Eau Claire has a question for you guys. Brian, hello. Thank you for waiting.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
I've been driving a hybrid for about 4 years. It's a hybrid Ford Escape.
Okay.
And I wanted to comment from an expert. I'm just kind of curious. I've done the math, and it doesn't come out, meaning that the hybrid on the Ford Escape has a battery pack, and that battery pack needs to be replaced at approximately 125,000 to 150,000 miles, and the cost is fairly high of about $5,000, and you don't save enough fuel to make it come out. So I was just curious if the guests had anything to comment. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. I'm sure we've got some comments here, and I know Eric's shaking his head no. It's
funny he's brought up. This is the same question that we get every year, and you know, hybrid's been around, you know, 10 years now, a decade, and this is the number one question. This isn't the first time it's been asked. It won't be the last, I'm sure. And this is one of the reasons we have the expo, is to talk about these things. You know, realistically, on most of these hybrids, you know, the battery is going to last the life of the car, and the life of the car is going to be certainly more than 125,000 miles. And then secondly, the price of it isn't going to be $5,000. Even the Toyota Prius, and I think maybe John can talk to this, the battery doesn't cost $5,000. It's much below that. I mean, certainly maybe when they first came out, it would cost more, but you know, the Prius and others have been around, again, nearly a decade now or more, and those prices are much below that at this point.
Yeah. You guys are agreeing with me? I see shaking heads. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm thinking back to when I was a child, and if I could get 150,000 miles out of a car before I had to rebuild the
exactly.
engine,
yeah.
man, you had something special, right? 100,000 yeah, yeah. miles, you're thinking about pulling the engine and re-ringing it and all that. So just the number of miles that go today is amazing.
But the only way that I would say a heavy all-wheel drive vehicle like a Ford Escape or a Toyota Highlander hybrid wouldn't be a payback type of an experience would because heavy all-wheel drive vehicles are the most difficult to get really solid fuel economy gains on because of the complexity and weight of the vehicle. All-wheel drive systems use a lot of energy. So the savings in fuel is a much smaller percentage by converting a gas-only SUV to a hybrid SUV. Passenger cars, there's a greater savings in that area, so you have a lot quicker payback time. But that said, a vehicle like the Escape or the Highlander hybrid still going to give you about a 20% improvement over the gas version of that vehicle. And so that's still a large enough savings for that segment. to be worthwhile.
Katie in Appleton, we're on to you now. Hi, Katie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First, I just have to tell you it's so funny that this is happening because the guests at my house drove here in a Prius, and I just pulled over in the car to ask this question and just by accident just pulled behind a Prius, so it's just everywhere. But my question, because I'm fascinated by these cars, this technology, the issue always that you hear, the counterpoint is, well, what's the environmental impact of making the nickel hydride battery or manufacturing it far away and shipping it, you know, all those kinds of things. So I would be just so curious to find out what your guests have to say about that, that counterpoint to the footprint that the manufacturing of these batteries could leave, because I don't know, and I'm genuinely very curious about how that argument shakes out. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks. Yeah.
All right. Glenn, do you want to start?
Well, yeah, and we there's many experts in the world that argue over the footprint of what, you know, digging the precious metals out of the earth is, and there isn't a clear consensus between, I think, any two studies about what how much it actually does. So in the United States, you have to look at three things, I think. First off, you're looking at foreign petroleum usage, which when you have a hybrid, we get away from that. We look at local emissions, which get a lot better by using the hybrids. And then the third thing then is basically overall the amount of CO2 that's produced through the production and then the use of the vehicle. So if in the end, if we're not even, you know, let's just say that we're dead even on CO2, we're still way ahead on the amount of petroleum we're using as the U.S. and the amount of emissions we put into the air as far as these ozone alerts we have in all the big cities. And so that, you know, there's net gains from having the hybrids. And I think we're seeing now that we're getting a lot more miles out of these than we thought we would, too. The guy called in 230,000 miles. So now at that point, I think we're actually going and we're looking at overall, you're at that many miles, you're looking at a reduction in the greenhouse gas production also.
All right.
In fact,
John, you were going to John Dolan.
The topic about it takes more energy to manufacture a hybrid than it does a conventional car. There's this whole thing of offsets. In fact, the factory where the Priuses are made in Japan in Tsutsumi is actually half of its power comes from solar power. Half of the power they have enough solar arrays there that does 2 megawatts an hour of power is produced, and so half of the actual available power for manufacturing that car is provided by solar. And Toyota's taking even more drastic steps than that. And it's not just PR. It really works. They've got a hybrid freighter that can carry 6,500 Priuses from Japan to California on a weekly basis. It's solar-powered, hybrid, diesel, freighter. So they're carrying it beyond just the cars.
Oh, man. Wow. Okay, well, thanks for that question. Somebody else had that exact same question, emailed that in, so I'm glad to get kind of two for one here. Let's go to Tom in Milwaukee next. Tom, hello to you.
Hi, I'm actually going to be in the expo promoting diesels, green diesel specifically, and biodiesel, and in the end, promoting what was promoted by President Clinton in 1997. He told Detroit to build a hybrid, but he told them to build a diesel hybrid, not a gas hybrid. So the way things divided out around the world is Japan went with a gas hybrid, and Germany went with cleaning up the diesels. Now we still haven't gone to the final step of doing what was proposed 14 years ago, other than in ships. So it's the value of doing a diesel, which is much more efficient than a gasoline engine, so you can easily get it with present-day technology, an 80-mile-per-gallon car, easily, compared to a Prius. And I just don't see that being pushed very forward. VW, every once in a while, puts out a Golf model out in Switzerland for display, and then they take it back off out of production. So those are my only real comments, and I'd like to hear how the panel comes.
Yeah, all right. And Glenn, I mean, some of your work that you were talking about earlier relates precisely to what Tom was talking about, does it not?
Yes, it does. Now, the thing we have to remember is if you can't get your vehicle to be cleaner than the emission standards, you cannot sell it in the United States. So, number one, the diesel aftertreatment in Europe has come a long ways. I don't think they've quite merged the levels. They have two different standards. There's a diesel standard and a gasoline standard for emissions. They realize that diesels have trouble with, each of them have their own problems. They're not the same. They're not a unique set of problems. And so they're converging, and you know, sooner or later they'll get there. But the after-treatment systems to get a diesel to be that clean become very expensive. And as you add the after-treatment, you make the engine less efficient. Now you have direct injection gasoline. Its efficiency's gone up. It has some emission problems anyway. So in the end, we're kind of converging. But what you see is that a diesel engine costs more than a gasoline engine, and then you have the hybrid components that cost more. So if we do a diesel electric hybrid, the cost premium will be very high. And so now instead of people trying to recapture $3,000, we have to recapture $6,000, $7,000, $8,000. And so I think that's probably been the real issue there, as far in the world. And then the problem is meeting the emission targets in the United States for diesels with the soot levels is very difficult. And so I think because of that, the automotive companies have been kind of resistant to, you know, spending that much development money on that particular product.
Well, now that research that you're doing, would that address that issue then?
It would. The problem we're running into right now is that the government has a lot of momentum in the plug-in hybrid campaign. And so if you go to General Motors and say, we have a new combustion technology that's great, and an engine out, it's really clean, you don't need an after-treatment, they're like, we just invested, you know, $500 million in the Volt. Right? So we really don't have too much of an interest in like switching gears right now, you know. And so we're kind of right now we're in the PHEV, go big, go home type scenario. Mm-hmm. And so we're working with Oak Ridge National Labs in Oregon on this new combustion technology. And hopefully it'll work out, and we'll have a demo out there next year, and we're going to take it to an OEM and test it, and we're going to take it to a national lab and test it, and then we'll know for sure.
Then we'll know for sure. Yeah.
That'd be great to see.
And John, you were going to add something there?
Well, just to emphasize what Glenn has already said, the cost premium. You know, basically, right now, a hybrid powertrain obviously costs more than a conventional gas engine powertrain, but through economy of scale, the manufacturers have gotten it down to where a hybrid powertrain is about the same cost as a diesel powertrain. And then if you add hybrid onto diesel, then we go back to where we were before, and the price of the vehicle becomes too high for mass applications. And
even the fuel prices, when those start getting really high, and you know, where diesel is over $4 a gallon and things like that, and people are like, well, geez, sometimes that's a hard thing for people to get past.
Yeah. Because the European diesel was so much dirtier than our standards for the longest time, you couldn't buy a VW diesel in the U.S. You couldn't buy one in California or states that had carb laws like that.
Yeah, you couldn't. You were paying the penalty by buying the vehicle.
Exactly.
Basically, the automobile, yeah. VW was just paying the penalty for not meeting the standards. So.
And Debbie, just relating to this, going back to your research, Glenn, Debbie in Madison said, isn't ethanol made from corn? Just last week, the weather guys were on my show, and they said corn being planted increases our humidity quite a bit. I don't think this is very good for our environment to have ethanol. You're talking about mixing ethanol with diesel, correct?
Well, we don't mix the two. No, we have two different injection systems. So we inject one and then we inject the other.
Okay.
As we do it. But, you know, ethanol can be produced from, doesn't have to be from corn. It is the quickest, I mean, from a mass production standpoint, currently it is the leader because there's just so much corn, and it's, you know, after you take it off the cob, it's very easy to transport all that. There's some biomass technologies, a cellulosic ethanol that's out there. So I think we're going to see those things come of age and become more available. The other thing we're doing with this is we actually don't distill the ethanol the whole way. So we can save one-third of the energy used to normally produce ethanol into E85. We're going to run 70% ethanol, 30% water. And with that, we don't have to do any modifications to the engine other than installing the injectors for this ethanol mixture. And so we're getting a huge chunk out of that greenhouse gas because we're not using the natural gas, which is usually the thing you're using to get most of that the ethanol clean in the process.
Now, corn is the cellulose of choice in the U.S., but you know that Brazil's done a great job with sugarcane ethanol, and it's a lot more efficient for their economy and their agriculture to use the sugarcane.
they're basically they're using the sugars off of the corn, and you basically what's left over is the protein, and you actually feed that back to the cows. So we're actually looking at technology where you could put it in a farm. You could have these micro generation stations because the farmers produce the corn, they can make the ethanol then because they don't need the last part of the process, which is where all the equipment is. And then they could burn it in a regular like engine and then put it right to the grid.
If I can play devil's advocate, is there a possibility this may never really produce enough to offset any foreign oil use at all?
Well,
the application of ethanol. I mean, if you were to devote every square acre of agriculture to making, you've heard that argument, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The question is if you can do it locally and you don't have to, we're to the point where people can do micro digesters for, like, I just went out and pulled like 200 pounds of weeds yesterday because I planted like, you know, a whole bunch of sunflowers, right?
Mm-hmm.
200 pounds of weeds. How much ethanol could I get out of that?
Exactly.
And so I, you
know, compost.
Yeah. So in the future, I think that those are the types of technologies that will come of age, and then each home will be, you know, kind of producing some of its own green energy.
Yep.
And of course, there's a lot of research, and we feature that about every other month on the show. For the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center is doing a whole lot of work on other than corn, and corn is really kind of considered, sorry, we're at the corn stage right now, but we're going on to other stages of other kinds of products that mm-hmm. would go into making ethanol. Well, we've had a lot of comments from people who have Priuses that have gone a long, long time. The cost of a replacement battery, here's one. How much does it cost, actually, to replace the battery, Eric?
Well, you know, there's a couple ways to do it. I mean, you can go to the dealer and just, you know, give them the credit card and pay what it is. And, John, do you know the exact cost at Toyota
right
now?
A complete battery is $2,300 now.
Yes.
It used to be about $6,000 when the Prius was
right.
new to the world.
And there's other options even from that, too. You know, at the Green Drive Expo this weekend, like if you have a Honda hybrid and you can get your existing battery remanufactured, refurbished, you know, for just over $1,000 and some change. And or you could buy a replacement pack. There's a guy there who's got brand new batteries, again, for about that $2,000 amount. And you can come, you know, talk to people right down there to see about what you can do.
Although because of high voltage, it's not a do-it-yourself project.
I mean, he sells them, and then there's a network of people who install those.
Yeah, right.
So those are some of the things, and we should mention a few more of the things that people are actually going to be able to see at the Dane County Fairgrounds when they go to this Green Drive Expo.
Well, we'll have, as I said, a lot of test drives by Toyota and some of those specialty vehicles like the Prius V and the plug-in. We'll have test drives from Smart Center Madison, which Zimbrick is now selling the little two-seater smart cars, which are fun to drive, as well as some aftermarket conversion companies showing how those works. There's going to be a lot of owners from around the country on Saturday showing off. We've got quite a few Chevy Volt owners from around the region. There's going to be a Tesla owner who's driving down today from, or maybe tomorrow, coming down from Minneapolis. He'll be there on Saturday as part of the owner's showcase. You can vote on your favorite cars that you want to see. There's electric motorcycles from Zero Motorcycles up in Fond du Lac. We've got homemade electric vehicles and things from the Electric Vehicle Association. A range of hybrids showing their longevity. Really, there's lots of exciting things. MG&E will be down there showing off charging stations.
What do you have for speakers this year? Do you have an agenda?
Yeah, we do. We actually that is up on the website. If you go out on the sidebar under Madison, you can look at the speakers. Our featured speakers are from California, Pat Kadam and Nick Rothman. They're from Green Gears out in California, have done more plug-in hybrid conversions than anyone in the world. Probably about 750 and counting or so at this point, probably. So they're going to talk about sort of how they got to that point. We also have some guys, Dennis is going to come, Wiedemann is going to come down and talk a bit about, is your hybrid too quiet? He's from the Noise Institute. He's going to talk a bit about that. And another guy's talking about, Brad Horton's going to come and talk about his life with the Chevy Volt.
And so all of those are actually when you pay to get into the Dane County Fair, which is a few dollars, I forget what.
Yeah, it's I think it's like $6 or $7 for adults. But if you like our Facebook page, you can get 2-for-1 tickets too. So.
Okay. And of course, Glenn, you're going to have your vehicle there,
That's
too.
That's correct.
All right. Well, guys, this has been great fun, and it's this Saturday and Sunday, the Green Drive Expo is part of the Dane County Fair at the Expo Center.
Yeah, the Lion Energy Center.
Lion Energy Center. I never remember the name. Okay, thanks so much, guys. Look forward to visiting with you again. Glenn Bauer from the UW College of Engineering, John Dolan from Smart Motors, Toyota dealer in Madison, Eric Powers, who is the local green entrepreneur, started that Green Drive Expo. Thanks to them, and thanks to you for listening. Tomorrow's Garden Talk, Mark Dwyer from the Rotary Gardens in Janesville will be our guest. I know it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.